Monsters Are Real, a short story by Troy Denison. Monsters are real. We know that when we're kids. But as we get older, the creature in the closet and the thing under the bed are supplanted by the serial killer and the suicide bomber and the paedophile. Not the unknown shapeless creations of our imagination. These are the faces in the crowd. Monsters we read about in the paper and see on the news. The person you pass on the street. The kind old man that lives alone in the house next door to yours. The kind old man. I've seen him. Watching the kids when they play outside his house. I've seen him peering through the flawlessly clean glass of his front window, or sometimes smiling to them as he slowly ambles past on his way to the shops. Sometimes I see him pruning his roses. He has beautiful roses growing along the fence that borders the pavement where the children play. They climb and reach towards the sun in meticulously clipped splendour. He tends those roses and lavishes on them all the love and care that a parent would a child. He buys sweets at the post office every Thursday and shares them among the little ones as they play in the nearby park. He sits on the bench with a cane by his side and a battered lopsided hat on his balding head. He smiles at the young mothers as they walk past with their babies in buggies. Smiles and chats to them as if he hasn't a care in the world. And they talk to him. Can't they see past that benign smile? Can't they hear the venom that lies behind the words? Are they oblivious to the monster that lies behind that friendly visage? So he smiles, and he watches, and he waits. And I know, I just know that he's biding his time, looking for the opportunity, waiting for some small innocent to drop their guard in a moment of childish naivety and fall prey to his evil. He has to be stopped. This evil needs to be nipped in the bud before it has the chance to flourish. I'm sure he'd appreciate the irony of that. Someone needs to put an end to him before he goes too far. So, now he sits there in the front room of his little house, surrounded by knick-knacks and paintings of flowers. Books on gardening adorn the shelf in the corner, and on the fireplace is an old photograph of a young woman. He sits there tied to the chair with a length of clothesline that I picked up in the garden before I crept into the house through the back door. I took him by surprise. He was old and weak, and even though he struggled, I overpowered him in a moment. The strength in his arms that would have proved too much for a small child was no match for an adult. He looked at my face, at the determination, anger, and righteousness it held, and he knew. He knew. Knew that I recognised him for what he was. The sick, twisted pervert that wanted nothing more than to prey on the ones that were too weak and helpless to stop him. I saw it in his eyes before I gouged them out of his head. They made a soft pop as I tore them from his skull and threw them to the carpeted floor. He wouldn't be looking at any children with those sick eyes anymore. The old man started to scream, but I was ready for him, forcing his mouth wide open and thrusting his pruning shears past his lips. The razor-sharp blade sliced through his tongue in a moment, and he began to gag and choke as his mouth filled with blood. He passed out from the pain, and I took a moment to visit the tool shed in his garden. It was well stocked with just about every implement that a gardener would ever wish for. The 16-ounce claw hammer that I picked up turned his feet into a mass of broken bones and pulped flesh in a matter of moments. The pain brought him round, and I allowed him a moment to grasp the fact that never again would he be able to walk past the children as they played in the street. Then I took the garden shears and removed the fingers on his hands in a series of smooth motions. Snip, snip, snip. The blade slicing through flesh and muscle and sinew and bone like a hot knife through butter. And suddenly the paedophile had lost the ability to hand out sweets to unsuspecting kids. But still, it wasn't enough. He needed to suffer, to truly pay for every wrong, twisted, sordid thought that had ever crossed his evil mind. There was only one thing I could do. So I began to loosen the belt on his trousers as his body was racked with convulsions and he sobbed with the realization of what was about to come. And then it was over. Sweat covers my body and the air is filled with the coppery tang of the blood that cakes the carpet. The ruined mass of flesh that had once been a living, breathing person was dead. Whether his heart had given out or from the massive loss of blood, it didn't matter. It was over, and I finally allowed a small smile to cross my face, safe in the knowledge of a job well done. So for a while, the world will be a little safer, and the sun will shine a little brighter while the children play in the street. And while they play, perhaps for a while, they'll forget the single truth that every kid believes in. Monsters are real. If you enjoyed this story, please find other works by this author at www.smashwords.com. Thank you for your support.